So now, according to the Bach, the only stuff that we have here is whether it was Nebuchadnezzar or Yahweh Nebuchadnezzar. Why did it
go to the
screaming, Rabbi Winston.
Right. So we're on Daf Vavam and Beis. And if you count up from right before the lines get wider, it's about four lines. Omer Rabbi Chelbo, Omer Rav Huna. Hayotze mi Beis HaKnesses, al yafsia psia gasa. On his way out of the Beis Knesses, he should not take giant steps, as if to say he's in a rush. Rashi says, about 10 lines down from the top on the right side, Rashi says, Lefisha mara bi atzmo she ikuv beis haknesses doma olav kemasu. You know, to stick around in the shul is a burden for him. He's very eager to fly the coop, as we would say. So therefore, when he walks out of the shul, he should walk in small steps, as if to say he's sad to have to leave the shul. He's not happy about it. That's the way Rashi learns it. But Rabbeinu Yonah learns it a little bit differently. He says that if he takes these large steps, quickly hurrying out of the Beis Knesses, then it makes it seem that there's a certain tircha being in the Beis Knesses. You know, he's looking for a more relaxed kind of atmosphere. But in truth, it should be the reverse, says Rabbeinu Yonah. He should find his real menucha on a spiritual level in the Beis Knesses, and therefore he should want to remain and linger behind as long as he possibly could. The question is, why does Rav Huna feel compelled to prohibit this pesia gasa, you know, these long strides on his way out of the Beis Knesses? The Gemara says in Shabbos Kuf Yud Gimel that in general a person anywhere in the world at any time should not take a pesia gasa. And the Gemara establishes that on Shabbos there's a special iser of pesia gasa, but during the week, even on a weekday, there's an iser of psia gasa. And if a person takes these long strides during the week, then it robs him of one over five hundredth of his eyesight. So again, we have now three different levels of iser psia gasa. We have an iser psia gasa of Rav Huna when he leaves the shul. We have an iser psia gasa during the week because it takes away 1/500th of his eyesight. And then we have a special iser psia gasa on Shabbos because Shabbos is lo yehei luchach b'Shabbos ki luchach b'chol. That we have to experience the Shabbos in a different way than we experience the entire week long. But in any event, once we've established in the Gemara and Shabbos that even during the week there's an iser psia gasa, why does Rav Huna have to tell me that there's an iser psia gasa when he leaves the synagogue, typically the whole week long, anywhere he is, he's not allowed to take a psia gasa? So the Pnei Yeshua says that there are certain situations in which a person would be allowed to take a psia gasa if it was during the week and he's not leaving the synagogue. For example, let's say during the week he knows that he has to take care of something important. Maybe he's doing exercise and he's jogging. Maybe he's on his way to a mitzvah. But in the case of a Beis Knesses, he has to be particularly careful, says the Pnei Yeshua, because the spectator, the onlooker, doesn't know that he's running out of the shul for some sort of upgraded reason, inspiring reason. The onlooker thinks that maybe he's interested in getting out of the shul. He just wants to fly the coop. He can't tolerate being in the shul. And I think what the Pnei Yeshua is referring to here is the concept called chashada. Chashada means that a person shouldn't do something which, unless you happen to be privy to some inside information, it looks like you're violating an iser. Like, for example, the Gemara says if you have a house that sits on two streets, then on Chanukah you have to light on both sides. So if somebody goes up this street, he sees you near Hanukkah. If somebody goes up this street, because otherwise somebody might see, wait, you didn't light near Hanukkah. And that's called chashad. So that's the Pnei Yeshua's answer to this question. Basically, what it comes out is that psia gasa during the week is not a general all-inclusive iser, but rather it indicates a certain attitude. Either it's gaiva, maybe it looks like he's haughty, that he takes these large strides, or maybe it looks like he's very pressured, you know, and he's not relaxed, that he doesn't have the mid of bitachon. But if he's running to a dvar mitzvah, then for sure it's okay. And then the question is, what about on Shabbos? Is somebody allowed to run on Shabbos for a dvar mitzvah? So the answer is yes, even though somebody might suspect him, but nevertheless, if it's clear that he is motivated to do a mitzvah, then that's not a violation of Shabbos. The Gemara says in many cases, we allow you to do things on Shabbos because there's a dvar mitzvah. For example, if you were to read, let's say during the week you're busy learning, and on Shabbos, you know, you want to take a little break, and your owning Shabbos is to read, again, heaven forbid, no, I'm just joking, the Jewish press, or, you know, the jokes of all that we used to tell about the Jewish press, you know, they asked them if you're allowed to take it into the bathroom, or whatever. And Mishpacha magazine, or whatever your favorite thing. So some say that even though on Shabbos you're not supposed to be doing that, but if it's your owning Shabbos, then it's not a... It doesn't undermine your kiyum of Shabbos. Fine. So that's one thing that we want to point out. But then we have Abaye's comment. Abaye wants to reinterpret Rav Huna and severely limit the statement of Rav Huna. What would you say, let's cover the Gemara and try to guess, what would you say before we get to Abaye? Are you allowed to run or take a psia gasa to enter into the Beis HaKnesses? For sure. I mean, if the whole reason, as Rashi says, you can't run out of the Beis HaKnesses because Dome looks like Imara Atzmo Sheikun Beis HaKnesses Dome Lov Kemasoi, then certainly if he runs into the basement. So I don't know, Abaye feels compelled to point this out, and it seems so obvious. Omer Abaye Lo Amoron El Lemepak. It only applies on his way out, Avalameil, but his way in, Mitzvah Lemirhat. He should certainly run into the synagogue. Shenemar Vineda, that's the first word in the pasuk. It's not in the text, but Vineda Nirdefa Ladas Es Hashem. Hoshea Novi says we should run Nirdefa in order to know God. And the place that you know God is in a Beis HaKnesses. That's where you have your encounter with HaKadosh Baruch Hu through Tefillah. So as I said before, what is Abaye coming to add here? And not only that, he needs a pasuk to teach us that a person should run into the shul. I mean, why would I think otherwise? So the Marsha gives a whole new pshat in this Gemara. Very creative. It's not in the text. And, you know, you wonder whether or not this is really pshat, but this is the Marsha. The Marsha says that what Abaye is talking about is a case of someone who's leaving the Beis Knesset. He finished his davening, and he's directly on his way to the Beis HaMedrash to study Torah. And you might think that he shouldn't run out of the Beis HaKnesses because maybe somebody would suspect him of Nirolov Kemasui. You know, he's had it with the shul. He just wants to get out. Like my father used to always talk about one of the young people in the shul. He asked him why he doesn't come to shul. He says, Rabbi, you're making a mistake. I go to a different shul. So he says, so why don't you come to the shul? Your father's there. She says, when I sit next to my father, I feel the burden of my father's eyes watching me. So he wants a little freedom. So he davens in another shul without his father being there. So some people feel, you know, the pressure of being in a synagogue, and they run out. So here, he's running out because he wants to chop his every moment, every opportunity to learn Torah. He's going to a base HaMedrash. Im Yotze, says the Marshom, Yotze Beis HaKnesses Kedei Likonis Beis HaMedrash L'mod Torah, is then mitzvah olav lorutz. And a lot of the Mefarshim don't like this pshat, because how does the onlooker, the spectator, know that he's running out of the Beis Knesses in order to go into the shul, in order to go into the Beis Medrash to learn? They may suspect him of Kemasui. But in any event, the Marsha says that for the greater good of hopping around every minute in the Beis HaMedrash, he's allowed to run out, and he's not only allowed, he's even encouraged to run out of the Beis HaKnesses to get himself into the Beis HaMedrash as soon as possible. And I was thinking that in the light of this Marsha, maybe we could answer another question. I was bothered because Abaye quotes a pasuk. That pasuk, V'neida Nirdefa, is a pasuk in Hoshaya HaNavi. Correct? And what's unique about this pasuk that should direct me towards the case that Abaye is talking about? If Abaye is talking about going into the Beis HaKnesses, then he's going for the purpose of davening. So obviously he wants to run into the Beis HaKnesses for the purpose of davening. And the pasuk doesn't seem to be addressing the case of somebody who's running to daven. But I was thinking, according to the Marsha, that Abaye is talking about someone who's running not into the Beis HaKnesses, but into the Beis HaMedrash for the purpose of studying Torah. Studying Torah is always identified as Yediyas Hashem. That's what the Rambam writes in Hilchos Yisod HaTorah and Hilchos Deos. You know, how do we know God? By studying His wisdom, which is embodied in the Torah. So although tefillah is more of an emotional experience of encounter with Hashem, Torah as an intellectual experience is Ladas. Ladas means the intellect. So that's why Abaye chooses this pasuk to show that it's critical that when you're going Ladas Hashem, you're going to study God's Torah and understand His wisdom, you should do it as a meritza, as a running situation. He quotes here the Ein Yaakov, very fascinating. The Ein Yaakov says that there's a difference between the word mirhat and the flip side of psia gasa. Meaning, if Abaye is coming to limit the statement of Rav Huna was opposed to psia gasa when he's on his way in, and Abaye is encouraging on his way out, the flip side, the opposite of psia gasa, should have been lemeil is mitzvah lifsoa psia gasa. In other words, why does Abaye use a different terminology? He should have stuck to the same language as Rav Huna. Rav Huna says a psia gasa is prohibited on the way out of the synagogue. Abaye should have said, Adarabba, on the way in, you should do a psia gasa. So the answer says the Ein Yaakov is that Abaye wants to go even further. Not only should one take long strides in order to speed up the process of getting into the synagogue, but moreover, mirhat means ritza. Ritza means not just take big long strides, but run into the Beis HaKnesses in order to get there as fast as you possibly can. So the chiddush of Rav Huna is that even though he's not running out of the Beis HaKnesses, he's only taking long strides, even that is prohibited. And that's a big chiddush. The chiddush of Abaye is that not only when you're going into the Beis HaKnesses should you take long strides, but even more than that, you should be running into the Beis HaKnesses. That's how the Ein Yaakov sees it. And if that be the case, then Yaakov is answering our question, what is the chiddush of Abaye? I mean, why would we think that the Isur of Rav Huna joining us from psia gasa on the way out should apply to the way in? There's no logic for that. The answer is, Abaye wants to tell you an extra chiddush, that it's not only enough that you take a psia gasa to enter into the Beis HaKnesses for davening, you should even take a meritza, a mirhat, and run into the Beis HaKnesses as fast as you possibly can. The Re'af says, what happens in the case of a person who's going out of the Beis HaKnesses because he has to take care of his daily needs, his chores, but his intention is to come right back to the Beis HaKnesses? Is he allowed to run out of the Beis HaKnesses in order to cut down his time outside of the Beis HaKnesses? Meaning, the sooner he gets out of the Beis HaKnesses, the sooner he's able to get back into the Beis HaKnesses. And the Re'af, his name was Pinto, we mentioned him many times, he says that that's the Chiddush of Abaye. If he's leaving the Beis Knesset, but his intention is to come back to the Beis Knesset, so he's just leaving the Beis Knesset for a certain limited of time, but his intention is to come back as soon as he possibly can, then he's allowed to run out of the Beis Knesset in order to cut down the downtime in which he's outside of the Beis Knesset and shorten the span in which he can get back into the Beis Knesset. But once again, the commentaries are not satisfied with this because the onlooker doesn't know that he's running out of the Beis Knesset in order to run back into the Beis Knesset as soon as he can. So that remains a controversy. But certainly, we have the pshat that the Ein Yaakov says that he's running into the Beis Knesset and he's obligated to do so in order to express his zrizus, his eagerness to get into the Beis Knesset. How much more so, according to the pshat of the Marashah, that he's running into the Beis HaMedrash because he wants to study Hashem's Torah, he should want to get there as fast as he possibly can. You know, I was thinking, and this is an idea that's going to come up later in the sugya, if there's a shir going on, or a chavrusa going on in the Beis HaMedrash, and you want to make sure that you're there on time, you don't want to miss part of the shir or part of the chavrusa, then certainly Abaye's dictum is very appropriate. Run into the Beis HaMedrash, the way the Marashah learns, in order to make sure you're there on time, instead of being laid back about it and coming late. And Rashi points out that the word nirdufa, if you take a look at Rashi, is lashon merutza. In other words, it's not that Abaye is just telling us mirhat as another way of saying psia gasa, but mirhat means ritza. And Rashi points out that that's exactly what Abaye learns from this pasuk, nirdufa. Nirdufa means ritza. Oh, let's go on. Om Rabbi Zera, Meiresh originally, Ki hava chazina lula rabbanon de karate lepirka b'Shabbos. There was a drasha that was given on Shabbos, and I saw that the rabbis were running to hear the drasha. I was unsatisfied with that. I was upset about that. Amina, I said, Kamachailon rabbanon Shabbosa. You're not allowed to run on Shabbos. That's what we spoke about the Gemara in Shabbos Kuf Yud Gimel. And therefore, by running into the Beis HaKnesses for the purpose of hearing the drasha, that's a violation of Shabbos. But cave under Shamin Alaha. But I heard the statement of the Rabbi Tanchum Amar of Yeshua ben Levi. Then I changed my mind, and I also joined the bunch. I started running to hear the drasha on Shabbos. What was the statement of Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi? Liolam Yarutz Adam Lidvar Halacha. Vafilu b'Shabbos. We'll soon see that there's another girsa, but our girsa, our text, is l'dvar halacha because the focus of the drasha on Shabbos was to teach the laws. Whether it's on Shabbos, the laws of Shabbos, whether it's on Moed, the laws of Moed. And Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi wanted to emphasize that a person should run to this dvar halacha, to hear the dvar halacha, vafilu b'Shabbos, even if it's on Shabbos. How does Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi know that you're allowed to run for Dvar Halacha even on Shabbos? So l'chora, the way we said it before, that all these Isurim that apply to Shabbos, that we have to make sure that we walk on Shabbos in a different way than we walk during the week, we have to dress a different way, all these are alleviated for the sake of a mitzvah. And here he's running to hear the drasha, to hear the Dvar Halacha. So then it seems that it would be obvious that he should be running to hear a Dvar Halacha. There's no Easter here of Shalote Luchach B'Shabbos Ki Luchach B'Chol. He's doing it for a sake of a mitzvah. And yet, Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi feels compelled to derive this from a Pasuk. Shenamar, the Pasuk says, Achrei Hashem Yelechu Ki Aryeh Yishag. In other words, a person should follow in the footsteps of Hashem as if he heard a roar of a lion. So the Marashah says, what's this pasuk teaching me? What's the bearing, the relevance between running on Shabbos to hear Dvar Halacha and a person who's following in the footsteps of Hashem as the lion roars? So the Marashah says that Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi saw in this pasuk a connection to Shabbos, even though the subject, the theme of this pasuk is not Shabbos. But what happens if a person is on Shabbos and he hears the roar of a lion? That's a pretty dangerous thing. You know, where I live, we have a problem with coyotes. But there they had problems with lions. Like, lion is a pretty dangerous animal. We're still hearing stories about lions killing people. He says that on Shabbos, certainly a person should run away from the fear that he might be attacked by a wild beast. I mean, that comes under Pikuach Nefesh. You can even violate the Malach on Shabbos. Certainly he reads on Shabbos. So Marsha says that from the fact that he's running away from the roar of the lion, the Chiddush is that even on Shabbos he should do so. So therefore, when a person reads this pasuk, and the pasuk starts with the words Achrei Hashem Yelechu, he can interpret as referring to Achrei Dvar Hashem, and he should do what he would do if he was hearing the roar of a lion, meaning he should run away from this lion. And that applies even on Shabbos, and this is a remez, an allusion to the fact that for the sake of Dvar Hashem, a person should run even on Shabbos in order to hear the Dvar Hashem. But frankly speaking, with all due respect to Marsha, I still don't think he has an answer to our question. Why does Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi feel compelled to find a source, in this case a pasuk in Hosea, to prove that you're allowed to run to hear a shir on Shabbos? Why would I think otherwise? We're allowed to run for any Dvar Mitzvah. And certainly to hear a shir, that would be with a Kal V'Chomer. So I want to point out that there's another girsa in the Gemara. The Marsha I'm leaving right now is a question. But if we have the other girsa, this is the girsa of the Gaon, of the Vilna Gaon, it says in that, in his text of the Gemara, Li'olam yarutz adam lidvar mitzvah afilu b'shabbos. And here I think that perhaps we could say that there is a chidush, and that Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi feels compelled to establish that this is so. If a person is running to hear a Dvar Halacha, which is the text that we have, then the Gaon would argue, we already know that. We derive that from the pasuk that we saw Rabbi quote just earlier, Nirdefa Ladas Hashem. When it comes to the study of Torah, which is Yediyas Hashem, the pasuk tells us nirdefa, we should run for that. So why does Rav Tanchum, Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, feel compelled to look for another pasuk to tell me that we run to hear a Dvar Halacha? We can derive from the old pasuk that we've already had. We've established nirdefa ladas Hashem. The answer is that that's Yediyas Hashem. But what about for a Dvar Mitzvah? Dvar Mitzvah is not Yediyas Hashem. Dvar mitzvah means walking in the path of Hashem, following and upholding the mandate of Hashem. For that we need another pasuk, especially when it comes to Shabbos, to permit redifa and ritzah for the sake of Dvar mitzvah on Shabbos, that we don't know. And therefore he quotes the pasuk, Achrei Hashem Yelechu. That pasuk is referring not to the study of Torah, but to follow in the footsteps of Hashem, and to implement the will of God, that means Dvar Mitzvah. And yet, the pasuk says you run to that the same way that you run away from the fear of being attacked by a lion. And therefore, the chiddush of this pasuk, says the Gaon, is obviously a case of Dvar Mitzvah. And once Rabbi Zera heard this whole presentation of Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, then he too ran on Shabbos with the rest of the bunch to hear the drush. Or, alternatively, the way the Gaon has it, to do a Dvar Mitzvah. So this is our attitude towards hearing a Dvar Halacha according to the Girsas HaSfarim that we have. And as I said before, you know, you don't want to come late for a shir. Again, even if I always tell my students to come whenever they can, even if they come for the last minute. Chaparayin a lot in the last minute. But in the perfect ideal world, a person should be there on time, and he should hear even the beginning of the drush. Sometimes the Rebbe asks a kasha at the beginning of shir. If he misses that kasha, he really doesn't appreciate the shir. Rabbi Bolsai, now we have a very, very famous Gemara. Yeah, Dov?
I'm just wondering how the Grez version, how it fits in with the beginning of the Mamar that he says he was upset at the rabbis for running to the Pirka. If we already knew that you could run to a Dvar Halacha from the first pasuk, so why isn't the second pasuk to show they can run to Pirka?
Excellent question. I mean, if the subject of Rabbi Shuva Levi is a Dvar Mitzvah, so what does that have to do with the hesitation or calming down Rabbi Zera about those who ran for a drasha? I mean, the Gaon is saying that to run for a drasha, that was a milsa of the Peshitta. There's no Easter on Shabbos to run for a drasha, and we could derive from near the Faladas Hashem. Why then does Rabbi Zera need to hear the words of Rabbi Tanchum in his Chiddush that you run for a Dvar Mitzvah based on a different pasuk? He should have been calm about it from the get-go. I guess, again, it's your question is better than my answer, but maybe with Dochak we could say that according to the Gaon, what Rabbi Zera was afraid of was that people would suspect that he's running for a different purpose. Maybe he's running for a mitzvah, but he's not running to hear Torah. But once Rabbi Tanchum established that you're allowed to run for a Dvar Mitzvah, and therefore, even if they would suspect Rabbi Zera of running for a Dvar Mitzvah, that too is permissible. That gives you a broader scope. Then people would certainly assume that Rabbi Zera was running, if not for a Shir, if not for a Dvar Locha, at least for a Dvar Mitzvah. So in fact, if people would have known that Rabbi Zera was running to hear the Shir, then Rabbi Zera would have been calm about that. But he's worried that people might think that these rabbis are running to do a Dvar Mitzvah, they're not running for a Shir. Now we get to a very famous Gemara of Rabbi Zera. We're talking about Pirka, which we started discussing earlier, and that is a drasha that's given by the chacham, by the wise person. And everybody in the community is invited to attend this drasha, this Pirka. Amar Rav Zera, Agra, what schar, what reward does a person deserve for going and attending Pirka? And you and I would have said, for sure the answer is, that he's hearing Torah. He's studying Torah. No, says Rav Zera, Rahata. Rahata means Ritza, for the fact that he's running to hear the drasha. So Rashi says the following. Agra de Pirka. Ikar, please underline that word, Ikar. Ikar kibul schar. The main reward, says Rabbi Zera, that you'll get. Habrios. Interesting that Rashi used the word brios. Brios usually indicates a sort of lower level, you know, rank and file kind of citizen. I mean, we're talking about people who are coming to hear a drasha. Rashi calls them brios. So what is the kibul schar? What kabbal schar do they get? Harotzim lishmoa drasha mipi chacham, and they're running to hear the drasha. And now we get to the letdown, because we think that the schar for going to run to hear a drasha is the Torah itself. I mean, the schar for Talmud Torah is ayin lo rasa. It's unbelievable. He says no. He's schar hamarutza. It's for the physical exertion of running to hear the drasha. So Rashi apparently, in the space between this word merutza and the next word sharei, is going to ask Akasha. It's not written, it's implicit. Why should he only get schar for running? For the effort of running? The answer is sharei rubam, because most of them einam mivinim, they don't really know what's going on. Lahamid girsa, to have the subject matter so clear, Lahamid Girsa means to be able to understand the clarity of what they were taught in this drasha. V'lomar shmua, and they can transmit what they heard, mipi rabam, from their Rebbe, liachar zman, after a period of time, sheyekablu schar limud. Now there's Rashi saying, there's A and not A. A is the perfect ideal schar, if a person fulfills the mitzvah of going to hear a drasha and hearing Torah from his Rebbe in the perfect way, in the ideal way. The ideal way is to receive schar limud. But if he can't receive schar limud, and we'll see exactly why, then he will receive schar for his physical exertion, all the power and energy he put in running to hear the drasha. And that's the fallback position. Obviously, if things were ideal, you know, not in the default position, but in the lechatchila position, he would get schar for limud. But the problem is that most of the people don't understand the drasha. So they don't get schar limud, but they get schar for running. So wait a minute. Let's read the Rashi again. Is Rashi telling me that most of the people do not understand what's being taught? Are they so thick and dense that they just simply cannot comprehend what the Rebbe is telling them? But let's read Rashi again. Rashi is saying something else. Sharei rubam einam mevinim lahamid girsa veloma shmua mipiram leachar zman. Rashi is saying that the average rank and file participant in the shiur is not capable of understanding and having the shiur penetrate into his brain to the extent in which he can pass on, he can transmit from his Rebbe after a time period what the Rebbe said. Meaning you walk out of a shiur and we test you and we ask you, what were the main points of the shiur? Give us an outline of what you heard. A, B, C, and D. Can you outline the shiur and review it with clarity in such a way that even li'achar zman, after a period of time, you can transmit the shiur, or at least the main highlights of the shiur, to someone else? And the answer is very few people can do that. How many people can attend the shiur, understand the main points of the shiur, and be able to transmit that shiur, review it, and pass it to someone else? Zot Rashi, the average person can't do that. Those are the very few exceptional students who are, you know, like when I was in Rav Salvechik's class. So as you had seniority, you know, with each year that passed, you would move up in the shiur until, you know, after like 5 years, you could sit in the front row. You know, that's the way it worked in the shiur. If somebody came into the shiur for the first time, he's a freshie, and he sits up front, you know, he takes a front seat, they would boot him out of there. You know, there were Gedolei Torah who sat up front, because it takes years of experience until you understand the approach of the Rebbe to such an extent that you can be mamid girsa lomar shmua mipi rav only achar zman. You know, some people could tell you over what they heard within a 5 minute span. You know, that's how long that memory lasts. But after that, it's impossible. So Rashi says that the average person will not get schar limut. And my friends, this is a pella. This is an unbelievable chiddush of Rashi. Rashi, I would have said without Rashi that if you understand the shiur, then that itself is enough to bring you or merit you for the reward of learning Torah. Meaning the barometer here is just simply, did you understand the shiur? Maybe you can understand the shiur but you can't say it over. Or maybe you understand the shiur but you can say it over for the next 5 minutes, the next half hour, the next hour. But a day later, a month later, you can't remember the shiur. And Rashi standards, the barometer, the test that you have to take in order to receive schar limud is not just because you understood the shiur, not just because you walked out of the shiur and you can summarize the shiur, but your understanding of the shiur, and the shiur became part of your entire being, your psyche, such that you can be mamid girsa, lomar shmu liachar zman, even after a time period. Rashi's demands of limud to achieve schar limud and not just get schar for the physical exertion of running to the shiur are very high standards. And Rashi requires that a person could be able to say over what he heard from his Rebbe even later on. Rashi doesn't tell you how long. Is it a month later? Is it a year later? Is it 5 years down the line? I don't know. But it certainly indicates a very, very high standard. At the end of the day, Rashi's saying that the schar that you can get is the schar of rahata, of running to hear the shiur. However, the Tosus Rosh has a whole different pshat in this Gemara. How could it be, asks the Tosus Rosh, that Rabbi Zeir is telling us that the schar that you get is for merutza, for running? In fact, Rabbi Zeir himself, this is what bothers the Tosus Rosh, was the one who shied away from running to a shiur. It's the same Rabbi Zeir who on Shabbos didn't want to run to a shiur initially, because he felt that was Chil Shabbos. Well, if the Iker Mitzvah and the Schar and the merit that you get for the Shiur is running, so why did Rav Zera have hesitations about running to hear a Shiur on Shabbos? And the Rosh takes this Kasha very seriously, and therefore he offers another Pshat. Reb Zeir never meant to say that the Ikar Schar, as Rashi would have it, is for Meritza, coming to the Shir and running to the Shir. No, 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 no. What he means is that there's an additional enhancement to the Schar, above and beyond the Schar for hearing the Shir. The complete perfect mitzvah would be if you ran to hear the Shir. And that extra energy or that extra input on your part, expressing your eagerness and exerting such energy to get to the Shia, that makes your mitzvah of Torah study a perfect mitzvah, a shleimus mitzvah. But obviously the running is not the main priority here, and that's not the Iker Schar. The Iker Schar is for understanding the Torah. And Reb Zeir knows that very well. Reb Zeir knew, therefore, that running to hear the Shia, the Schar for running, is only secondary. It's an addition, it's an add-on, but it's not the essential mitzvah and the Schar mitzvah of coming to hear the Shia. And since, says the Tosa Rosh, the Meritza is only a Tosefis, it's only an addition to embellish your Schar mitzvah and make it from a 90 mitzvah to a 100 mitzvah, therefore that increment in jacking it up and adding this embellishment is not enough to trump the Isur of Ritza B'Shabbos. So during the week you should run to the Shia and perfect your mitzvah of coming to hear the Torah. But on Shabbos, for that extra additional cherry on top, you know, for the luxury of expanding your Schar mitzvah, we're not going to allow you to run on Shabbos until you heard the drasha of and the derivation of Rab Tanchum in the name of Shuman Levi from the pasuk of Yelchu Ka'aryeh Hashoek. So the machlokas, it turns out, between Rashi and the Rosh in terms of how to understand Rabbi Zeira is what is the Iker Schar for going to a drasha. According to Rashi, the Iker Schar, because you don't have Schar Limud, is the Schar for the Merutza. According to Tosa Rosh, Iker Schar is for the hearing the Torah and understanding the Torah. The Merutza gives you an extra mileage, a couple extra inches here, and it perfects the mitzvah. That's the Tosa Rosh. He quotes here Maral. The Maral Miprag has a sefer called Nesivos Olam, and the Maral says that Ikar Schar Shadim Notel Al Kiyum a Mitzvah, who be Ofen Shemekaima Mitoch Dochak Vikoshi. What Rav Zeir is trying to say is an application of the general rule of Lufum Tzara Agra, that the more effort and the more discomfiture you feel by implementing the mitzvah, the greater the Schar mitzvah. And that's what Rav Zeir wants to emphasize here. If a person does what's called a mamatz, he makes a great effort to do a mitzvah, he runs, then he will achieve a certain schar. And then the Ben Ishchai has a very interesting pshat here in Rav Zeir. You know that the Mishnah in Peah differentiates between two parts of a mitzvah. There's part of a mitzvah that you get schar in this world, but the main keren, the principle of the mitzvah, is left for the world to come. Do you remember that? Some people have the midig of saying it after Birchas HaTorah in the morning. Says the Benayahu, he says that what Reb Zeir wants to know is, when a person runs to a shir, where is the schar? Is the schar in the next world or is it in this world? And Reb Zeir's response to that is that there are tzvei dinim, there are two dimensions to coming to hear a shir. There's the effort and the merutza that you run to hear the shir, and there is the Torah itself. The schar for Torah itself, ayin lo rasa, that's left for the next world. But in this world, you will be rewarded for the meritza, for the physical effort that you put in, the intellectual effort and that success thereof, that's left for the world of intellect, for the world of eternity. That's not limited by the physical world. But the physical expansion of energy, that will precipitate schar reward in this world. Omar Abaye, Agra Dekala Duchka. Rashi says, Agra Dekala, Shabbos Lufnei Regel. There was a Yarche Kala on the Shabbos before Yontif. Akol Nesofim Lishmoa. Everybody gathered together to hear from the Chacham, Hilchos, Haregel. And Abaye says that the schar that you get for coming to hear this drasha is duchka, the fact that it's uncomfortable for you. There's a crowd of people who came on the Shabbos for Yontif and you felt crowded in. It was uncomfortable. That's where you'll get the schar. You know, the obvious question here is what Abaye is coming to be mechadesh. I mean, we just had the statement of Reb Zera about running, you know, the physical exertion of energy to get to the shir. Abaye adds the element of duchka, of feeling uncomfortable at a shir. You wonder why Abaye felt compelled to add that once, or why the Gemara felt compelled to add Abaye once Rabbi Zera has already told us that the schar for running to a shir is the physical discomfiture of having to run to the shir. He says the following, in the name again of the Ben Ish Chai, Madua Chilka Gemara B'meimer Zu Bein Pirka L'Kala. Why the Gemara has to make this distinction between Pirka and Kala? Also, why in the case of Pirka, the Gemara talks, Rav Zeri talks about the schar that you get for running. With regard to Kala, the schar is what you get for Dochak, for feeling crowded in. So he claims that there was, again, that this is a sociological comment, which, you know, I don't know how to relate to it, but he says the following, that the case of Pirka is when you have a rabbi, I guess today we would call it a scholar in residence, who comes for Shabbos to a certain community, and he gives a drasha in the Beis HaKnesses. He says, in such a case, there were no great crowds. I would have said just the opposite. You know, when you have an exciting new guest lecturer, it brings a crowd. But he's assuming that, no, there's no dochak.
Before the internet, so nobody knew who's coming.
Right, maybe nobody knew who's coming. But he says, Magia le'ir le'shabbos v'dorish beis ha'knesses. He says, lo hayu hamon magia kolkach. And therefore, there was no dochak. However, he adds the following point. He says that when you get to Yontif, that's Kala, this was the drasha of the Chacham Ha'ir. Nobody would be invited as a guest lecturer before the Chacham, because the Chacham had to paskin for his community. So following the drasha, they would raise their hand and ask questions, you know, I have Chametz here, do I have to do B'dika, do I not have to do B'dika, whatever. So the Chacham Ha'ir would do that. And I guess you'd add what you said, Aaron, that you didn't need the internet for that because everybody knew about it, right? He calls it Zman Kavua V'Yadulakol. He says, in such a case, everybody came on time. There was no need to motivate people by telling them they'll get schar for running. You take your time, you'll get there on time, because everyone was mocked to be there. There was such a great motivation. It was the Chacham Ha'ir paskening for you know, preparing them for the moed. However, there was a great dochak. So Abai just wants to give another example of feeling a physical suffering, so to speak, and lufum tsara agra, and getting schar for that discomfiture. Omar Rava, agra de shmaita. So what happens to a person who delves into a sugya and he dedicates himself to the study of Torah? Where does he get his schar from? Says Rava Svara. Svara means, Rashi says, Shuyogea, unbelievable. Rashi uses four different adjectives here. Usually Rashi is very short and terse. Shuyogea, Vitoreach, Umechashev, Lehovin, Taimo Sholdov. This is not a simple matter. This is not easy. You know, to study in the way that Rashi is describing it, and especially we had the previous Rashi that he'll be able to understand the sugya to such an extent that even way down the line he'll be able to transmit it to others. That requires a tremendous amount of yigia. You really have to sweat it out. I would say that the greatest challenge in learning is laziness. And what I mean by laziness is intellectual laziness. You know, it's so easy to be lazy, to be laid back, and it's so hard to push yourself to really think of new insights and to delve deeply into the subject matter. That's the Ikar Aschar. But I would like to add something to this Rashi, and I hope Rashi would agree with me. You know, at the end of a mesechta, we recite a siyum, and in that siyum, one of the things that we recite is Sha'anu Amelim Vehem Amelim. Anu Amelim Mekablim Schar, Vehem Amelim Vienem Mekablim Schar. Why is that so upfront, so high profile in the siyum? And I think I heard this from Rav Soloveitchik. If I didn't, then I think it's appropriate for him to have said it. So I don't remember if I heard it from him. But there's a fundamental difference between our Jewish concept of Amelus with regard to Torah study and the concept of Amelus out in the world, in the Welt Arayin. And that is that in the world, the concept of Amelus, of working hard, that is justified only by the results. Meaning, if as a result of all your hard work, you succeeded in achieving a goal, you know, you created something new, you know, you built a building or whatever you did, then l'mafreya, that retroactively justifies all the Amelus, all the work and hard toil that you put in. But if, let's say, you put in hard toil, but you didn't succeed, you know, a student studies for an exam, but fails the exam, again, you know, I feel bad for him, he put in such hard work, but at the end of the day, he got an F in the course, ein ma lasof. So Amelus, in the case of the world, in the secular world, is only a means to an end. And the end justifies the means, l'mafreya. Masha enkein in Torah study. Chazal tell us, Kishem Shani Akabal Schar al Adrisha, Kachani Akabal Schar al Aprisha. This Kabbalah Schar, even if what you think is not correct, and if at the end of the day all your insights into Torah are rejected, and somebody comes and asks you a bomb kasha, it doesn't mean anything. You still will get Schar for the Amelus. And that's what I think is inherent here, or implicit here, in what Rav is saying, the way Rashi embellishes it, that the Schar for Shmaita to Svara. Rashi says that means Amelus, Yogea Vitoreach. He tries to understand. Did he succeed? That's irrelevant. Totally irrelevant. Anu Amelim u'makabel schar. We get schar for the Amelus. Amelus is not a means to an end. Amelus Bitora is an end unto itself. Here in the footnote, he quotes again, the Sefer Benayo, who says that Svara here means Simchas HaSvara. And he writes, the Iker Simcha, the main joy of a person when he learns Torah, is through the Svara. Makshe, Metareitz, U'machadish Chidushim. Very fascinating, because I remember many times we studied the introduction, it's a very classical introduction of the Sukkot of the Iglei Tal, where he says, Lafuki says it's a mistake. People think that if you enjoy your learning too much, that reduces your schar. He says, Pungfakir, just the opposite. He says the Torah enters into your very bloodstream because of the simcha, the tainug, the enjoyment, the pleasure that you derive from Torah study. You know, with regard to other mitzvahs, maybe, you know, you could say if you enjoy it too much, maybe it reduces your schar. I don't even know if that's true. But one could ostensibly make that argument, and some people extended that to Talmud Torah. So the Iglei Tal says that's absolutely wrong. It's a major mistake.
I mean, in the Brach itself, Yarev No.
Right? Yarev No, correct. It should be pleasant to us. So I think that this Sefer Benayo is also a reflection of the same idea. He says, Ikar HaSimchu Al Yedei Svara. Shemak Shemetaritz U'mechadish Chidushim. And that's the schar that you get for Talmud Torah. So you see that Simcha is an integral, essential part of Talmud Torah. So let's just summarize what we learned today. We have three Chidushim today, before we go on to Titus. Number one, the Chiddush of Rashi, that Schar for Talmud Torah means that you could be Mamid Shmaitita, and you should be able to say it over and transmit it to others, Lachar Zman. That Rashi calls Lahamid Girsa. Number two, we learned the Chiddush, that the Schar of Torah is a reflection of the Amelus, when a person sweats and toils in order to come up with chidushim and insights to analyze the sugya properly. And number three, we have this chiddush that simcha and enjoyment of Torah is an essential part of the mitzvah of Talmud Torah. Oh, now we get to Avilus, and then we'll get to Tainus. Omar Av Papa, Agra Debei Tamya Shtikusa. Now, one thing I can tell you, that I understand out of Rav Papa's four words, two out of four. So that's not bad, that's 50%, but it's not good enough. Agra means schar, again, reward. This is, again, the pattern that we've been seeing over and over again. And shtikusa means silence. What I don't understand is, what's Beit Tamya? So here we have a machlokas, how to translate those words, Beitamya. According to one school of thought, and this is based on the Aruch, if I'm not mistaken, let me just see if I'm right here. Yeah, based on the Aruch, that we're talking about the presence of the dead, meaning the dead body is there. And the word Tamya means atzamot, means bones. So we're talking about a place where the bones are there. Now, we have halacha that in the presence of, and we learned it earlier in the Masechta Brachos, in the presence of the deceased, of the corpse, you're not allowed to speak Divrei Torah. There's a machlokas, if you remember, whether you could speak Mili Di Alma. You know, maybe the mess doesn't care about that one way or the other if you want to talk about the Lachshin Kugel. But if you're talking about Divrei Torah, that's called Loig LaRosh, because the person who died has no possibility of studying Torah. We're sort of insulting him by learning Torah in his presence. So that's one approach to Rav Papa. I don't think that that's the end-all, the be-all, the end-all of Rav Papa. But one approach of Rav Papa is shtikusa, means that he overcomes his sort of desire or his need to speak Divrei Torah. Halavai, we should have that desire. And he's quiet and he refrains from Divrei Torah in the presence of the deceased. However, all the other Mefarshim assume, from top to bottom, that what we're talking about is the base of El. We're talking in the presence of the Avel, not in the presence of the deceased. And then the question becomes, why is a person meriting schar for shtika, for being quiet in the base Avel? So first we have to ask a basic question. Assuming that Beit Tamya means base Avel, we have to know exactly how the word Tamya means Avel. And this is based on a very complicated kind of gematria, which is called Atbach Albam. But be that as it may, if we're talking about the base Avil, first question we have to ask is, who's getting schar for being quiet? And here we have a great controversy. According to one pshat, it's the Avil himself who's getting schar. This is the Aruch, and I looked it up last night. Baruch Hashem, I have an Aruch from 1599, so it's really reliable. And he says exactly what it says here: Notel schar al kashu shosek umekabel bi'ava. That he is quiet and in his silence he accepts the divine judgment with love. And I believe that the source for this concept of the Aruch is Aaron at the time that he lost his two sons, Nadavavir, because it says there, Vayidom Aaron. And they say that the Brisker Rav, whenever somebody brought up the subject of the Holocaust, he was always quiet. He didn't say anything. He was silent. And the reason for that is Vayidom Aaron, because Aaron, in the face of tragedy, we can only be silent. You know, all the explanations we could give, and many people have tried to explain the Holocaust, I mean, it's all just, again, pardon my expression, it's my prejudice, but I think it's a waste of time and it's a lot of hot air. Because at the end of the day, it's Yashar Darkei Hashem, Kelem Unavein Ovel, it's Shtika, and we have to accept justice. Rav Soloveitchik used to say that there's one day in the year when we're allowed to talk about these things, and that's Tisha B'Av, special heter of Eicha. I don't know if you're familiar with that, but it's a whole presentation of Rav Soloveitchik about the matir of Tisha B'Av of Eicha. So that's one approach based on the Aruch. I find this a stretch. I don't know, it doesn't seem to me that Rav Papa is talking about the Avil himself. And therefore I would suggest the interpretation of many other the Mefarshim, from the Tosa Rosh down to the Marsha, that we're talking about the Menachamim, those who come to be Menachem the Avil. And this is counterintuitive. You would think that the Menachemim should be talking away, you know, yapping away, in order to bring the Avil into a happy state, right? Why not, you know, pat him on the back, you know, tell him that the Boston Red Sox won the World Series, and, give him a smile on his face. But the answer is that that's really not the mitzvah of Nichum Avelim. I mean, again, if the Avil feels compelled, you know, to hear, let's say sometimes an Avil, you know, and I experience this, that you see someone coming into the base Avil and you haven't seen him in a long time. which may be one of two things: either that he felt it important enough to finally, express his friendship, even though for years it's been dormant, or maybe he's coming b'chlal l'kavod ames, not because of you. But be that as it may, sometimes the Avil feels comfortable by turning to the Menachem and asking him, tell me what's going on in your life. You've seen this, and that's okay. But what the Mefarshim point out is that it's only if the Avil initiates that. You're not allowed as the Menachem to initiate that. And the Shtika here is the silence waiting for the Avil to initiate. And I would go even a step further, Lefi Ani Hasdaiti. Again, nobody says this, and I think people would probably reject this idea, but I think that more important in terms of Nichum Avelim, more important than what the Menachem actually says, is what the Menachem doesn't say. What I mean by that is that silence is golden in this case, because to sit with someone and say, look, there's nothing I can say, all my words are meaningless, but I'm here with you, and I identify with you, and I came to be mechazik you, b'shtika, without saying a word. Sometimes silence speaks volumes. And that itself.
Ralph Skoll says the same thing.
He says it?
Yeah, one silence in these circumstances gives the more and the more consolation than one speech.
Wow, beautiful. I think he means what I... Because what is avelus if not loneliness? And when a person comes to be menachem, he wants to undermine that loneliness. He wants to calm down the Ovil and show the Ovil that he's not alone. So instead of coming in to blabble, now I want to tell you a story here. I had a Rebbe, Rav Nissen Alpert, Oliver Shalom. I don't know, some of you may have heard of him. Anyway, he lost his son Yeshaya, who's 21 years old. And in the base Ovil, he would not allow anyone to say anything. It was just silence. That was 7 days of silence. Occasionally he would initiate something, but it would always have to be relevant to the deceased. You want to talk about the midos. For example, sometimes you come to a Beis Ovil, you want to be Menachem, but you don't know the Ovil too well. So in my humble opinion, again, everyone has to deal with this in his own personal way, but I would say you could ask the Ovil, what were the midos of the Niftar? And we want to learn from that legacy. We want to try to emphasize and embody those midos. I think that would be a great aliyas neshama if we learn from the niftar. But he has here another pshat that I found very, very interesting, and he says the following: that the shtika here is because, this he quotes in the name of the Meiri, I believe, is because the Gadol, there were different people coming to be Menachem, and inevitably one of them was considered a Gadol. I don't mean to say he was the Gadol Adar, but he was, relative to the others who came in, he was the Gadol. And the others should wait until that Gadol would first express his Divrei Tanchumim. I'll quote his language. He says, "Haboim lebeis Avil enachmo v'yesh yesh lem leishe v'lishtok v'lishmoa kodem es divrei ha'gadol shebehem shemenachim es ha'ovil shem hayu achirim medabrim gam kein ein zeh kavod." He says that the Avil first wants to hear the words of the Gadol. The Gadol has an insight, whatever it might be, and again, there are different ways of taking that, but it's covered. First of all, it's covered to the Chacham, to the Gadol, and it's also covered to the Avil himself, if the Menachemim will back off a little bit and wait silently in the shadows until the Gadol completes his presentation or his discussion with the Avil. Fine. Omar Bar Zutra, Agra de Tanisa Tzidkasa. What is the schar that you get for a fast day? Tzidkasa. So Rashi says Tzidkasa shenosnim tztaka la erev. Interesting. La erev means at the conclusion of the fast. This is what we call break fast. Lefarnosas aniyim. What a great moment of compassion to extend towards the aniyim that we've all been fasting. They're going to break their fast on a morsel of bread because they can't afford more. And you're, Baruch Hashem, well-to-do. You have a whole, fridge full of food. So invite the aniyim, or in shul maybe, pay for or help sponsor a break fast so the aniyim could also break their fast, the covet. That is Rashi's pshat. So in other words, Rashi understands that we're not talking specifically about tzedaka in general. We're talking about the tzedaka of a tainus. The tzedaka of a tainus is to support the poor people in order to facilitate their, as we call it, breakfast. However, the Maharsha interprets this Gemara a little bit differently. He says that a person, by fasting, saves himself a couple of meals. Let's say 3 meals, for argument's sake. Each meal costs 50 shekel, 100 shekel. He saved himself 250 shekel. He didn't eat that day. He should take that 250 shekel and dedicate it to tzedakah. And when I learned this Maharsha, I was tempted to say that the Maharsha is based on a Gemara, which I think, if I remember correctly, is in Croesus. And the Gemara says that one of the Amoraim, I have to look this up for you, used to declare on a Tainus that the Miut Chelbi Vidami should be like a Karban. That a Tainus is like bringing a Karban. Who you bring as a Karban? You bring yourself as a Karban. Right? Because of the Miut Chelbi Vidami, because, you know, we're not talking about dieting, but we're talking about whatever you lose as a result of a tinnitus in your body is like you've brought it onto the Mizbeah. So the Maharsha takes that idea one step further and he says, whatever you gained by fasting, meaning instead of spending money on food, that money should be dedicated to the mitzvah of tzedakah. What do you say? So now we have the Me'iri, and the Me'iri says that basically we have to understand that the goal of a tinnitus is tshuva. Right? Has it say, Shlosha Dvarim Makarin Gzardino Shalada? Correct? What is it? Is Sa'aka, is Tzaka, Tztaka, and Tainus, right? And fasting. Tefillah and Tainus. So it means that the purpose of a Tainus is for tshuva. That's how the Rambam opens up Hilchas Tainios with Midarkia tshuva, that this is a method of doing tshuva. You want to upgrade your Maisim Tovim. So what better way, says the Meiri, to upgrade your Maisim Tovim and show Hashem that you want to do tshuva than to give tzedakah and do Maisim Tovim? So people might have mistakenly thought, says Marzutra, that the Iker Schar of Tainus is the suffering of the Tainus, or the Cheftza Shel Tainus. No! The Cheftza Shel Tainus is really just a means to an end, says the Meiri, to uplift you, to do tshuva, and to do Maisim Tovim and tzedakah. Omer of Sheshes, Agra de Hespeda Daluye. You know, people think you get up and you say a Hesped, a eulogy for the deceased, and you go through his CV, and tell us about his life, and spice it up with a couple of good stories and a couple of good drushes. That's not it. But again, the words of Rav Sheshes are going to sound a little bit alien to our ears, but he says the purpose of a Hesped, the goal of a Hesped, is to get the people to cry. The mitzvah of Avelus, and this extends from the time of the death all the way through the first 3 days, is bechi, is crying, 3 days of bechi. And in the language of Yirmiyahu HaNavi, it's called kina. Yirmiyahu HaNavi speaks about the mekonenos. They had professional mekonenos whose job was that after Chas V'Shalom catastrophe, or during the period of Avelus for Churban, they would ma'orah the people to bechi. Without bechi, you miss the mitzvah of Avelus. The mitzvah of Avelus is first is bechi. We saw by Avraham Avinu, he came livkosa. After Sarah died, bechi is critical. And the Mefarshim say that bechi is the lashon of dema. Dema is dalid mem ayin, which is a tear from the eye. And the word dema in Lashon Kodesh has another meaning. It also means confusion. Or, like Bein HaShemashos is called demai. It's a period of time where things, vision is not clear. It's blurry. And that's really what we're crying about, because everything is blurry at this point. The whole concept of Tzelem Elokim is completely undermined. Here's the body that just 5 minutes ago was jumping around doing mitzvahs and learning Torah, and now, look, Nebuch, it's just a corpse. And that requires a response of Bech. So today, again, you wonder whether or not the Maspidim, although I think, honestly speaking, if I can make this comment, I think we're going in the right direction. I think that now the Maspidim are more successful than they ever were to bring people to Bechi. But be that as it may, you know, a person is getting up in front of a tzibur to present a hesped, he should realize that bechi is his goal. You know, all the superficialities that they hack a chinik about, you know, she was the president of Women's Mizrahi. I mean, that's fine. But if it's going to get people to cry, and the experts really know how to bring people to cry, you know, that's a special talent. And I would say the more profound the drasha, the hesped, the more people will respond with tears.
So this is the person giving the eulogy, not going yes. to a funeral?
Like a person who's giving the eulogy should know that if he wants to fulfill his obligation as a maspid, to give a hesped, he will only accomplish that goal if people, as a result of his hesped, his words of hesped, will come to cry.
That's where the reward is at by the person giving.
Right, the reward of the maspid is if people will respond by crying. Omer of Ashi Agra Debe Hilule Milik. This is a Pella. And I have to tell you that, again, I don't like to, and I know Rav Levi Yitzchak Ditchva would be very angry at me, but this is a sad comment on how far we've gone in our society today. And I can testify, I've been at many weddings, and they missed the point over here. Rav Ashi tells us that the Iker Schar, when a person comes to a wedding, and he wants to be Mesameach Chosam V'Kala, is Mili. Take a look at Rashi. Rashi says, L'Sameach HaChosam on the top left, Bidvarim. So you know that in our day, there's a new minhag which is wonderful. I really support this. That at the end, towards the end of the wedding, you know, the people, especially the young people, they single file go by the chasen kala, and they ask for a bracha, whatever it is. You know, especially someone who's single, he wants to get a bracha that he would get married, so he gets it from the chasen kala. But I would say that that's a wonderful opportunity to fulfill what Rashi says: l'samech es hachasen bidvarim. So you'll ask me, what dvarim can you say to a chassid or to a kala that would be misameach? And truth be told, very often, and especially this was true back in the day, you know, when shadchanis was in mode, the chassid doesn't know the kala. I mean, he knows it superficially. Again, you know, in the modern circles, maybe they go out for 3 months or 6 months or whatever. But in the more religious circles, I know, for example, my son came to the conclusion he's ready to propose after 6 dates. My daughter was ready after 5 dates. I mean, it's crazy, right? I mean, for those of us who come from a Western background, this is like totally bonkers, right? Doesn't make any sense. That's why I say that from a certain perspective, and it's true even in the most modern circles, as they call them, where the chassid kala know each other for months, they still don't know each other. So imagine you're a friend of the chas, and you could say to the kala a few words. It doesn't have to be a longer paragraph to calm her down. You know, marriage is a nervous kind of thing. You know, am I doing the right thing? Yeah, I'm jumping. What am I jumping into? What am I getting into? But if you know the kala well, or if you know the chasin well, and you could say to the kala, hey, you know, the chasin's really a tremendous guy. I know him for years. Or if you could say the same thing to the chasin about the kala. Again, you have to do it with tact, and obviously this has to be well thought out, and you don't just blurt out words. But Rashi's saying that's the Iker Mitzvah. And instead, what do we have today? We have weddings, and I participated in them. And basically, I told my wife, whenever I dance at a wedding today, if my toes did not get crushed, I have to bench Gomel. And basically, you have groups of yeshiva students today, and how do they prove their one up on everyone? If they can be wilder and wilder and wilder. So now the Iker Schar of Simchas Chos V'Kal is how wild can you get at a wedding? And they do crazy things. And by the way, it bothers me that sometimes a person who thinks he's got the craziest thing, he hogs the whole floor. You know, he takes over the stage, you know, because he knows how to juggle fire 6 feet into the air. You know? But here it says, in the words of Rav Ashi, that the Iker Schar is to be Mesamech the Chasim B'Dvarim. Later on in this daf, we're going to have the sugya of the five kolos, you know, kol chasen, kol kala, and the ikar schar is for the kolos, for the voices. Whether it's the Berchas Chasanim, or whether it's a more personal, the Gemara says in Ksuvis, Ketzad Mevach, Ketzad Meraktiv Ifnei HaKala, how do we dance in front of the Kala? So the Gemara doesn't answer by standing on your head and doing a somersault that's 17 feet high in the air, or putting on a bear's costume so that no one else can dance because everybody has to see you dance with this bear's costume. That's a statement. It doesn't say that in the Gemara. It says Kala Nova Chasuda. Now again, I'm not saying that just blurting out Kalanova Chasuda, because we pass it like Beisul against Beishamai, and that standard three-word phrase is going to do it. You know, if you told me that 100 guys at my Yichasana all sang Kalanova Chasuda, that doesn't do me any good whatsoever. It doesn't warm me up. You know, Kalanova Chasuda is a standard line that you would say even for who knows who. You know, the Rashi says even if she's an Igeres or a Suma, Kalanova Chasuda. Obviously, Kala Nova Chasuda is not a reference to the physical beauty of the Kala. It's a reference to, on a deeper level, to the inner grace, the pnimius, the spiritual spark that's within her. But whatever it is that we can do to calm down the Chasen, calm down the Kala, and tell them, Adarabba, they're getting into a marriage with a lovely person. This is a special marriage. It's a special opportunity. That's what I think Rav Ashi has in mind when he speaks about Agra debehi lule mile. So Rav Ashi will stop here. We didn't get to the sugya that I was hoping to get to today, but that's okay. We'll get to that on Thursday. And that's the sugya of Rav Huna. I have here pages for you. Rav Cook has a very interesting take on this next sugya. But to be honest with you, I don't think our main yigia, if we can use Rashi's word, or Torah, is to understand Rav Cook. I mean, that'll be a nice icing on the cake. But just to understand pshat in this Gemara, what I call Teichverta, is a tremendous challenge. I've spent hours on the next few lines in the Gemara. We're talking about Mispalel Achorei Beis HaKnesses. So what you need to do is go through Rashi very carefully and then go through Tosfos. So you'll ask me, Rabbi Berzon, I looked and I don't see a Tosfos. Where is the Tosfos? The answer is that the printer decided to print the Tosfos on the previous Amud, Davvav Amud Aleph. So don't be fooled by that. So the bottom of Davvav Amud Aleph is the Tosfos Divrei Maskil Achorei Beis HaKnesses. And you might want to get out pen and paper and start drawing diagrams. I'm not good at diagrams, but I think I finally came up with a working shot in Rashi, and Tosis is Rashi, and Tosis is argument against Rashi. If anyone wants the pages of Cook for this Gemara that we're going to study in Mitzvah on Thursday, then I have them here. It's these two pages and these two pages. Yeah, it's only two pages because it starts on page 20. One second. What do you have there?
26 and 25.
Okay, so I made something up, messed up here. There should be another 25. Oh, here it is, right in front of my nose. Another 25. So it's on two pages only because it starts on the bottom here and ends on the top here. So it's not really two pages, but you need these two pages to get the whole kit and caboodle. Okay, then?
Okay.
All right, it's good.
All right, I got it.